Oh, boy. Veep is going into its second season. Veep, HBO, a great show. One of the best ever, I think. Well written, well acted, and starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Who could ask for more? She's online with us right now from Los Angeles. Unfortunately, not Madison. She's not here in Madison. Hi, Julia. How are you this morning?
I'm so good. Thank you very much.
It's kind of early there, is it not?
It is early, which is why I'm still in my pajamas with a cup of coffee.
Oh, don't say that. Come on.
I'm sorry.
You're teasing. You're teasing me. Okay. Is there a print on them, or is it just kind of... Oh, never mind.
All right, that's enough, Michael.
That's totally enough.
That's enough. Settle down, please.
You know what happened, though, Julia, is we said you were going to be on the show. We didn't mention that you were not actually going to be here. So we have a full house here expecting to see Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Oh, gee.
So I ran off some of the headshots, which you so generously sent us. And it's a good one, by the way.
Well, I'm glad. I mean, you know, if everybody wants to wait around for another 36 hours, I guess I could book a flight and come. But
yes, they'd be happy to. Yeah. Yeah, and so, but there is one young gentleman here, Keegan. Would you, Keegan, why don't you come up here, and you can maybe, because Keegan came here two blocks from the University of Wisconsin campus, walked all the way, expecting to see you in person, because he's a huge fan.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I'm just going to let him come up here and sit next to me. He won't necessarily say anything. It's just the idea, because I feel bad that he expected to meet you.
Oh, I feel bad, too.
Yeah.
Is he up there yet?
Yeah, he's here.
Hi, Keegan. How you doing?
Hey, Julia, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I'm sorry that I sorely disappointed you by not showing up.
Oh, that's all right. You know, speaking to you just over the waves here is a thrill enough.
Oh, my goodness.
It'll have to be, Keegan, so just sit there now.
Yeah,
and don't,
that's it. That's all you're going to get, Keegan.
And don't say anything. Don't say anything. So, Veep, what a tremendous show. I love it. It reminded me of this movie, the Loop one.
Oh yeah, In the Loop.
In the Loop.
It reminded you of it because it's the same creator genius behind it, Armando Iannucci.
Yeah.
Who is a brilliant British writer, producer,
yeah,
director, and he directed that In the Loop film, and so it's got a bunch of Brits behind it, this,
yeah,
show, believe it or not.
How do they know all this insights? It seems so authentic as to the jockeying for position and the backstabbing that might go on in D.C.
Well, you know, they're all sort of American political junkies. I mean, I think they know more about the system than I do. And you know how those Brits are. They're all so smart, you know. That you put that accent on and your IQ goes up another 150 points.
Yeah, they can say something stupid and it sounds smart. That's what I resent.
That's exactly that. Right. It, yeah, turns into something smart. So, yeah. But they're very bright and into politics and we've all, frankly, spent a lot of time researching the back channels of Washington and inside the Beltway. We've spent a lot of time doing that. So, and then it sort of shows up on screen as a result.
Yeah, it's a little bit like Hollywood, is it not? Inside the Beltway.
Well, I mean, you know, nothing is ever as it seems. So there, yes, and I mean, everybody's jockeying for position. Everybody, it's who's the most powerful? How do you stand and be near to the most powerful? There's always somewhere else to be that's better, and that's a lot like Hollywood, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways, yeah.
Pretty similar. And we've had Frank Rich on here, and I know he's a producer on this. And
he is.
I wondered, because he's a Washington guy, did he provide some of the inside insights?
Oh yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Of course. Yes, and he's written about Washington for so long, and he grew up in Washington, as did I, believe it or not.
Oh.
So, we share that, and frankly, he gives a lot of street cred to the show, and his insight about tone and I don't know, certain story angles and so on is invaluable to us when it comes to putting the thing together. Because really, fundamentally, I mean, obviously, we really want to make a comedy show, but we also really want to make it credible as we can. Now, obviously, we do take some comedic license to help move story along sometimes, but the more credible this show is, I think, the better, ultimately.
Yeah. The diarrhea in the ice cream shop, for example.
Yes, exactly. That is a very credible moment.
It actually is within the context of Selena. I mean, Selena Meyer is like a character to die for, isn't it? I mean, as an actress, as an actor.
Oh, yeah. Can I just say that yes. It is? It doesn't get more delicious than that. It's really a dream role. There's no doubt about it.
But was it written for you? I mean, it seems like it must have been.
I guess you can say it was. I mean, the show itself was in development when it had been written when Armando and I met for the first time, and we immediately hit it off. We were going to get together for a 45-minute cup of coffee that turned into a 3.5-hour conversation. It was very exciting. And at that point, he began to write the script. And so you can say that it was, but it was definitely in development. You know, had I not jumped on it right away, I guess somebody else would have been playing that part, and I would have been miserable. So happy that I nabbed it. And
Is she modeled on any person, living, dead, or imaginary of any sort?
No, she really isn't. Yeah. And in a very deliberate kind of way. I mean, we definitely, there's no parody of any one person, because I think that's too, it's too constricting would have been too constricting to approach it like that. She's sort of a conglomerate of a million different bits and pieces of lots of people. And then, of course, from my imagination, I mean, you know, she does things have happened in the show that have happened, or versions have happened to other people, and we incorporate that. But we definitely want to make her our own lovely, horrible Selena.
Yeah. She's so engaging and disengaging at the same time.
Yeah, she's wicked, and yet at the same time you kind of feel bad for her. Or at least I do, because I guess I have to play her. But she, in this next season, which airs on, which starts up this Sunday, this next season is different, because she's going to get a lot more power, and which is nice. She's going to be taken more seriously. She sort of leverages that out of a night of a bad midterm election, and then, of course, you know, you can imagine things don't work as well as she might hope. But
we have. Would you mind if we played a little bit of a clip here? It's just an audio clip, obviously, from the show, but it's the crying scene with Senator No Chin, Congressman No Chin.
Played by the wonderful Dan Bacchanal. Yes, absolutely.
Fabulous.
Go right ahead.
Okay. Do you want to set this up? It's the
yes,
crying sequence.
Yes. Well, what's happened is this is towards the end of season one last year, and Selena was asked to fly to Ohio to endorse Senator or Congressman Roger Furlong, who's running for governor of Ohio.
Right.
And when she gets there, she is told by him that he does, in fact, not want her to endorse him after all, because she's toxic. So she's flown in on Air Force Two only to be told that she's not worthy enough for an endorsement. And this is sort of like the final straw. There's been a big pile up of crap on her for weeks, and she's having trouble with her daughter who's in college and so on and so forth, and she loses it. So that's what this is about.
All right, here's the clip.
You know, Roger, do you sometimes think about, I don't know, I give you this and you give me that, and black is up but brown is down now. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in life, or even just with love, you know? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, aren't we just all finally just, you know, people?
Yeah, true words, ma'am.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I haven't seen my daughter in like 3 months, and Ted is just, you know, I don't know where he went, you know. You know, and I would love to go to that party, you know. I would like to be everywhere.
Look, Madam Vice President, I'm sorry. This doesn't give me any pleasure.
Don't you say it gives you no pleasure? When anybody ever says that, all they mean is that it does give them so much pleasure.
Look,
I know what that means.
Maybe you should make an address, okay? You talk about politics in America, working together.
I know how to give a
speech. Don't you patronize me with your no jaw, you congressman. No jaw.
We have to go.
Get the f- out.
Okay.
He was just not a nice man. I'll get you some tea, okay? Give me some tea. I'll just leave Mike. He can stand here with you.
I'm sorry about your tears. They suck. You know, my papaw used to say it's always darkest before the storm, so. Well, it's dawn. The dawn. It's always darkest before the dawn, and then he would kiss me.
Brilliant. That's just brilliant.
The guy talking there at the end is Matt Walsh, who plays Mike McClintock, my director of communications.
He's so great.
He's an amazing actor. And just a little backstory there, when he comes over and sits down next to me and I'm crying, in a previous scene he had said he's made very uncomfortable when women cry. He always gets an erection. So it's a particularly loaded moment.
Yes, definitely. And Gary, your aide, your unctuous aide, he's amazing.
Goodness. Yes, played by Tony Hale. He's a genius.
He really is. In fact, you know, and in general, you have to say that the casting on this show is like the best ever. There's nobody who shouldn't be there, and they're all so great. Your staff, they're amazing.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Yeah, we've got a good thing going.
Yeah, they're all thing. Excellent, most excellent.
Thank you.
Tony Hale and Matt Walsh and everybody.
Reed Scott and Anna Klumsky and
the guy who's the president's man who keeps coming in and everyone hates him.
Oh, yeah, that's played by Gary Cole. Now, that's going to... Oh, no, excuse me. That's right. I'm so sorry. You're referring to Jonah, played by Tim Simon.
Yeah. Right. Jonah, everyone hates.
We have in season two, we've got a few more characters coming in that are from POTUS's office. The wonderful Kevin Dunn is playing POTUS's chief of staff, and then Gary Cole is going to play a senior strategist who is just a numbers-crunching nemesis.
Yeah.
So, fun. Really fun.
I did have a few questions that prepared some questions for you. What is your favorite word?
Boy, you really put me on the spot, man.
Come on, what'd you tell Lipton? Can't you remember?
My favorite word.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I can't say it, can I?
Probably not. So I don't know if
so
we can.
I can't tell you.
Okay. Then what's your least favorite word?
I don't like a certain word in context. I don't like the word dear in context. Like,
dear.
If somebody were to say...
Call you dear?
Right. I hate that.
Oh, okay. You know, it's so embarrassing because I tend to do that. When I hit 60, it automatically occurs in the mail. You start saying dear. It's really weird. But
yeah,
I apologize.
You should, and I accept your apology, but don't do it again.
No. I won't go through the other ones. These are all James Lipton's Actors Studio thing. I saw you in the Actors Studio. Was that uncomfortable or was that fun?
The Actors Studio?
Yeah.
It's a little bit of both, but mainly fun because, you know, what actor doesn't like going on and on and on about themselves?
That's true. And then and then they turn and say, in this dramatic moment, and they show you doing the dance thing on Seinfeld or something.
I know. I know. So, exactly.
Yeah. Is it? And the Elaine thing, you know. Also, I enjoyed very much on when the whole Elaine thing that went on on the David show, on Larry David's show.
Oh yeah.
You know, that was a funny sequence, something, because he was trying to pitch a show about you trying to find work after the Elaine character.
That's right, and the show is going to be called "Hey, I'm Not Elaine."
Yeah, "Hey, I'm Not Elaine."
That's right. That's right.
Was that at all difficult in terms of having such a great success and being so identified with that character to go on to something else from there?
Was it difficult? You know, people ask me that question, and I guess you could say yes, but at the same time, I'm going to say no because I didn't think about it.
You didn't.
I just carried on. You know, I don't. I guess you could say I don't feel like it's the only thing I can do, so
no, sure.
I didn't behave as such. I wasn't playing myself. I suppose if it had been me out there playing myself, it might be a little bit different. But it's definitely an iconic character now. Listen, who wouldn't want to have played an iconic character? So I guess ultimately I would say, no, it really wasn't difficult. I just sort of carried on. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll tell you what's difficult.
Yeah.
What's difficult is finding really well-written material. That's what's difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's definitely found it here, or it found you, or both.
Yeah, we found each other.
Yeah. But working with Larry David, what's that like?
Oh, it's just great. You know, I've known him forever. You know, Larry and I, we were on Saturday Night Live together back in the early 80s.
Oh.
I was on the show for 3 years. He was only on the show for a year. Then he got fired.
Yeah.
And he was, never got a sketch on the air. Or he was absolutely miserable. And frankly, I was miserable there too. So we sort of, we kind of commiserated in our misery together. And that's how we first met. And I love working with him. He's an unusual fellow, but very fun to play around with, you know.
Yeah.
We've done a lot now too.
Yeah. Did he actually write all the characters on Seinfeld, or did Jerry write some of that, or did you write some of it, or how did that work?
Larry wrote the show,
and
he and Jerry certainly wrote together as well. But this was very much Larry's sort of conceit and voice.
Yeah.
But then it became Larry and Jerry's voice together, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they were very much partners on it. And as actors, we definitely, all of us had improvising skills, and those are useful and can enhance the written word tremendously. That show was not improvised to the extent that Veep is improvised now, which is very much a part of the writing process, is improvisation,
yeah,
too.
I was just wondering, because some of that stuff, you wonder how he had insights into contraceptive sponges and such, you know, Larry David.
Yeah, it wasn't like a how-to thing. It was just making jokes about sponges.
I know, but the implications of them, you know, it became quite a big thing.
Yeah,
It was surprising.
Yeah.
He's a complex guy, I guess is what it is.
He is a complex guy, but in a good kind of way.
Yes, very much. And I love your Paris movie.
Nice of you to say. Thank you. Yeah, that was fun to do.
So nice.
Yeah, my husband and I made a short film, short little independent film called Picture Paris.
Picture Paris.
I say short. It's about a half hour, which is kind of long for a short film, but whatever. And it aired on HBO. I think you can still get it on HBO. And it was an absolute ball to do. It was about a story of a woman whose youngest child goes off to college, and she and her husband have a trip planned to Paris the day after he goes to school. And, of course, something happens, and things change tremendously. It was really fun. But we got to shoot in Paris for a while. It's great.
Yeah. And you hate to give anything away talking about, but it's the perfect combination of sentimentality and cannibalism, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
That sounds like a joke, but it isn't, in fact.
Yeah.
It's really the case.
So nicely balanced.
Thank you. It's got a big shocking moment in it, yeah.
Yes, and because, you know, you're so into her disappointments, because Paris is going to be, for her whole lifetime, is thinking, I'm going to live in Paris and be like a Parisian.
Yeah,
and she finally gets there, and one disappointment after another, and you see her face fall. I mean, it was brilliant, I thought.
Oh, how nice of you to say thank you. Yeah, well, you have to get the audience on her side before you know what.
Yeah.
So.
And you see her in the Tuileries, and she's crying and sobbing and throwing the petals in the park, and you think, God, this has really gotten sentimental all of a sudden, but it's saved. It is saved, and it's just perfect. Who did the writing on this one?
My husband wrote it, Brad Hall.
Yeah, it was a great job.
Thank you very much.
Did you write it for you or for another wife?
Another wife, yeah, but fortunately she wasn't available.
Yeah, excellent, excellent, excellent.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't want to keep. I know you probably want to get up at a certain point, and your coffee's undoubtedly cold.
Hey,
and so
listen,
forth.
I'm up, Michael. I'm
yeah.
here. So,
yeah.
You got me up early. I'm here for you.
Keegan does have one thing.
Yeah, Julie, I've been reviewing. There's a whole bunch of questions I'd love to ask you. I'm going to ask you one that I've been tossing around in my head. You know, as a college student, me and most of my peers out there in the world right now are in this just perpetual whirlpool of just like coffee and Netflix all the time. And so I've gotten a whole bunch of TV show exposure recently. And one of my absolute favorites, it's a show that will be returning to Netflix soon in May, upcoming Arrested Development, as many people know. And as most people know, I'm sure that are fans of the show, you had a cameo appearance in a few of the episodes in season one or two. And I just wanted to ask, what was it like to work with the Arrested Development staff, or cast, I should say? And is there by any chance a hope in the world that you'd be coming back on the show in
revival.
May?
Oh.
Right, a revival.
Well, let's see. First of all, I loved working on Arrested Development. I did, I believe, three, maybe four episodes. I'm not quite sure. It was a genius show, very dense. We would often have to look to find Mitch Hurwitz, who's the creator and showrunner, and say, wait a minute, I'm not sure I understand the script, because it was so layered, but in the most delicious of ways. And I love working with all those guys. I think I primarily worked with Jason Bateman. Actually, we just realized recently, Tony Hale and I, that we did have a tiny, tiny little scene together, but we, you know, it was just very minor, you know, but I loved it. I had to play somebody who was actually pretending to be blind, and so
to gain
I
the
had
sympathy
to cross
of,
my
a
eye
judge.
During, yeah, and it was... A strange thing happened to me in doing this, because I can cross my eyes easily, but it was really weird to perform with your eyes crossed, and very challenging to try and be in a scene with your eyes crossed and remembering your line. There's some brain chemistry thing that happens. I don't know what it is, but yeah. That's for the scientists in the world to figure out. But it was very challenging.
Oh, man. Well, thanks so much.
And
sure.
Along these lines, any chance for Troll 2?
We're in negotiations now. No, I'm kidding. No, there's absolutely no chance. Actually, you know what? I believe they made a Troll 2.
Oh, they did?
Yes, and I evidently was not asked to return to it.
No.
They made it a long time ago, and I think it won some sort of award for the worst movie ever made in the universe kind of award.
But... Did he write Troll, or was he in it with you, wasn't he?
He was in it. No, good Lord, he didn't. No, he's a much, no offense, better writer than that.
But a break is a break.
That was the first movie we were ever offered, both of us, and it was going to be shot in Rome, and we were like, you know, 22 and 25 years old, and so we thought, oh yeah, we're going to do this. So we got to go to Rome for free and be in a horrible movie, but that was fine.
Yeah. Well, we should mention Veep, second season, starting Sunday.
Starting Sunday, April 14th, and lots of new Veep episodes coming that I'm pretty proud of. I hope people really like them.
On HBO.
Correct.
Where you can say any words you want. Was that part of the appeal of working HBO? Because I know that came up on Larry David's show too.
You know what? It is. I would say it's symbolic of the kind of freedom that you have. It's not just with language, but it's just from a creativity point of view. You're really left to your own devices, which is such a relief. So sure, it's fun to swear a lot, but it's also even more fun to be able to sort of find your way without people getting in the way, and that's just marvelous.
And Selena Meyer just about has to.
No
way around it. Yeah.
There's no way around it. And by the way, people do swear behind the curtain all the time in Washington D.C. Believe you me, the F bombs fly left and right.
Thank you, Julia, so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, and I love this show.
Thank you, Sean. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, ladies and gentlemen. As good as live. Thanks, Keegan. Great.
Thanks so much, Michael.
You're my man.
Awesome.
Cheers for Keegan. Mr. Netflix there.